4CKK.
KO4CKK, W4DJW. Good afternoon.
W4DJW, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. We had several rainstorms over here in Greer. How's the weather doing down in Graycourt?
It is extremely muggy. Had a little bit of a shower earlier, but didn't amount to be much. Sure like to see some more. I've got grass planted.
Well, when I looked out the side a little while ago, there was, after a rainstorm, took the dog and the cat outside and went to the mailbox, and steam was coming up off of the road. So it was a hot road and a quick, heavy downpour, really heavy downpour. It was overflowing the gutters, and water was coming down in front of the windows. It was so heavy. But it's done now. But that's pretty good, because it's doing that every other day again like it used to, and I'm not having to run the sprinklers at all. Got two new bags of grass seed out there I got to go put out, having to constantly overseed.
Right, that definitely saves on some water without having to use the sprinklers. I was kind of doing the same thing, and like you said, I'm kind of glad to see this on and off, but just need a little bit more of it. It seems to always stay north of me.
Yeah, we get a lot of it. I get worried when it does this, and then the big winds come, that the roots on the trees aren't going to be strong enough to hold the trees up against the blast of the wind that comes through. So I wouldn't mind if a little bit more of it went south as well, but it seems to go northeast all the time. It's kind of going by, and it kind of uses the mountain range as its buffer to keep it going northeast. So, and I'm a little closer to the foothill than you are, so I get a little more of it than you do.
Yes, sir. That is exactly a true statement. Hits those mountains and shoots up north. Seems like the only way we get is if it comes straight out of Atlanta. So that way to stay south of 85 along the 85 corridor and south.
So other than that, how are you holding up during the COVID-19 lockdown? Are you staying locked down, or are you getting out and about?
No, sir. I've had to report to work every single day. I actually was a part of a COVID-19 test center at the TD Center downtown Greenville for, we had the center set up for about 11 weeks, and I was in and out whenever they needed me to come over. I had somebody filling in for me.
So I guess you're part of the test that did not contract it, because I'm talking to you now.
Not that I'm aware of. We had no complaints with any of our folks, and there was probably 30, 35 of us, so it's been very, very good. We're actually kind of waiting to see, and fairly confident there'll be a round two next, I would not say too many more months.
Yeah, I think we're already seeing new highs, like in the thousands now per day that get diagnosed. So, but still, relatively speaking, a low quantity of death per those who contracted, I think like less than a whole percent around this area. I know that one of the guys that sat outside of my wife's office, she works in Spartanburg, and he was an older gentleman. He sat outside of her office. He had a cube out there, and about 2 years ago, he recovered from cancer. He was a cancer survivor, and doing really good, and his wife got COVID, and he was caring for her, and they were staying isolated. He would put the food at the tray at the foot of the door, and she'd pick it up, and they wouldn't be together but he got it anyway, and he's no longer with us now. It didn't take but about a month. And he could survive cancer, but he couldn't survive COVID. I was really sad for my wife, because he sat right outside the door of her office.
Absolutely. I hate to hear that. That's definitely a tough story. I understand you get close to someone like that. And yeah, it did seem to hit folks like that. But the age range has actually been more of the 30s group, is where the high things are. But I believe that's due to, one, they're not paying attention to the rules or suggestions, and they're still getting out and doing, and just not following any guidelines whatsoever.
before DJW. That does have a lot to do with it. That's one of the reasons that I'm being overly cautious. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to get it. I don't do well with being sick. My wife, my sister-in-law got sick about 2 weeks ago, and she was in Johnson City. Her father-in-law passed away, and they were going to, her husband and her were going to attend the funeral. And she had something that happened a few months back, and they didn't know if it was a heart attack or what, a seizure or something. Then it happened again while they were in Johnson City. And she bit her tongue really hard. She'd been in the hospital for 2 weeks in ICU. They've been keeping her sedated. And my wife has been going up there, staying in the hotel there. She was talking to the people at the hospital, and they said in Johnson City they've only seen 2 cases of COVID so far, period. End of story. In that hospital, 2 cases. So I'm telling my wife, you know, be very, very careful. And she's telling me she's safer up there than she is down here. This is a hot spot compared to that.
KL4CKK, that's true. And I also believe because for us specifically, the testing was doubled with the people coming through. It started out as limited groups, and then as we went further and further along, the governor wanted to get as much testing done as possible, so we opened it up, and we were doing sometimes 300 to 500 people a day.
Yeah, I was tracking that very closely at the beginning. I quit tracking it after a while because I'm not really going out. I go out every other week to get groceries. And like this week, I did make a trip out to take the dog to get her shots because she can't get groomed unless she gets shots, and unless she has papers that she has shots. But it's little things like that once in a great while. But for the most part, I work from home, so I'm still working. That hasn't changed any at all. I've been doing that for the last 15 years, on and off, for the last 4 years steady. And so my lifestyle, I was already used to not going out during the week because I work California hours, so I don't get started till later in the morning, then I work later in the evening. Just finished up work just a little bit ago, if I don't get pulled back in. But I'm in the age group, I'm 61, which is really close to the age group that doesn't mess around with it. what did Clint Eastwood say? A man's got to know his limits.
Staying safe, and I'm glad that your wife didn't have any problems with her journey. I know that my wife has been home for, gosh, I don't know, 2.5 months now, and they still haven't given her any dates to go back to the office. I've got her little home office set up here, a couple large-sized monitors and a laptop connected, so she actually prefers to sit here and work versus going into downtown every day.
That's the same. Well, that's the same thing for me, but not exactly for my wife. She's in HR, so normally people in HR work really close with the people that they're working with, and makes it difficult for her when she's not able to do that. But she's getting in close. She's getting used to it. She put her office in the sunroom downstairs, so she's got nice, pretty, bright sunshine when it's not raining. And I'm upstairs, so when I'm talking on a bridge and when she's talking on a bridge, we don't interrupt each other. It's not like she knows some people that are doing it, and the husband and the wife are working out of the same room, and that's difficult. I hear people on bridges like that where you can hear the other person talking. They don't go on mute immediately after they finish talking, and you can hear the other person talking while they're talking. And so that's just adapting and learning, I think. But I think we're not going to come out of this with the same work style that we were used to before we went into this. This is a life-changing event.
Absolutely right. I know that my wife's company has toyed with the idea of, hey, these folks can do this much work from home, and as long as they're doing it, maybe we should start considering this idea. But unfortunately, people like your wife who really need to go in because she has to meet with folks and jobs like mine, where there's always a need of something, seems like every day or at least a few times a week, kind of still have to make that trek out and remain on call.
W4DJW. Well, I noticed the new call sign, KO4 CKK. You're a relatively new ham. What got you into ham radio?
With what I do and have done for a little over 20 years now, it's been an interest of mine. Finally found an opportunity to go to a class and sit through the course, and once you finished that week, you could test, and you knew by the end of the day, on Friday, the last day, whether or not you have a call sign or not. So, just love of radio, I guess, would be the easiest way to say it. And this was just another avenue. Plus, I support these folks that run amateur radio with
So, did you have any family members or anything like that? Did you grow up around it, or did it come in through people asking for your help, or how'd you get exposed to it?
I lost it a little bit there. No family. And not quite as old as you, but big enough to understand the CB world, and kind of started with that. It was an interesting hobby. And as a young child, set up a base station in my bedroom and talked to the truckers along the interstate that I was close to.
Okay, and I did bump up my power a little bit. You got some scratch coming in on you, too. I don't know if this will help or not, if it's something to do with the weather up at the tower site, then it probably won't, but it might. You might let me know if that helped any. But that's cool. When I was a kid, I was a CB-er as well when I was in high school. I was a CB-er until my CB got stolen from my car. And then I was no longer a CB-er because I didn't have the money to get another one. That was like a Christmas present one year. And it lasted about a half a year before somebody ripped it out of my vehicle. And then my dad was always a ham radio operator the whole time I was growing up. I think he was the one that started it in the family. And I helped him, my cousin and I helped him put up a 70-foot tower behind the house. But I never really got, I mean, he'd throw books at me, not literally, but he'd give me these books that said, here, study and get your license. The whole time I was growing up and on into my 20s and 30s and 40s, and finally one day sitting on a bridge coming home from Charlotte waiting for traffic to start moving again, I had a scanner. I listened to the CBers on the scanner to find out, because I made the trip every day back and forth to Charlotte. So I had me a scanner in case that, you know, I got stuck. And listening to it and getting bored with it, I was scrolling through the menus in it, and there said ham. So I pressed the button on ham, and I heard a couple guys talking on this repeater, and I've been full bore ever since.
Well, that is very cool. I think you and I have spoken before, and it's great to hear you come up again. Yeah, I understand what you mean about Gibbs. My grandfather was actually a truck driver, and between he and one of my uncles, they gave me a hand-me-down CB and provided me a power supply for my birthday. I was about 19 years old, probably, and I was able to obtain a base station antenna from a guy who was a big CB-er that he no longer used. He said, if you can take it down, you can have it. I climbed about a 40-foot tower. We were young and dumb, 18 years old. I said, okay, I got it down. Did that, took it, nailed to a tree, not knowing anything about radio.
Well, that's how you learn. And then I take it you got out of it for a while, and now you're getting back.
Yes, sir. By the way, you sound much, much better. Yeah, I mean, it was more of a hobby, and of course, growing up, getting married, having children, you kind of have to back off some of those things, and it always crossed my mind here or there. When I got into the radio business full-time as a job, and being involved in public safety, everybody's like, oh, you need to be a ham, and I finally bit the bullet and said, all right, let's go do it, and here I am.
That reminds me, when I was studying for it, I was scared to death, because my dad was an electrical engineer, and he was really smart. And I was a computer developer, programmer, and I was learning, but I wasn't. I didn't figure I'd ever be as smart as he was. Never. I didn't think I'd ever make that. So I was really sweating bullets when I was studying. So I'd burn all the since I was a programmer, I would. I wrote a program that would burn the questions and the answers to a CD because there was no MP3s or anything like that. This is in 2004. So I burned them all to see the questions and the answers. And then I would listen on my way to Charlotte to the CD, and it would ask the question, and then I would answer it in my head. And then it would tell me the answer a few seconds later. So I had a few seconds between the question and the answer to answer it. And I just did that over and over and over again for about 6 months. And then when I finally was ready, I went over to Spartanburg. I hunted for the nearest test, no matter where it was. I went over to Spartanburg, and I passed three of them, the CW test, the novice test, and the general test. And I sat on that. Now, the CW test, that was 5 words a minute, copy only. But it was still nerve-wracking. But it was, looking back, it was fun. But while I was doing it, it was nerve-wracking. I sat on that for about 6 months and then went down, then studied the same way for the extra. And when I was ready, I was ready. And I just hunted for where's the closest test, soonest test, and it was in Atlanta. So I got up early one Saturday, and I took off to Atlanta, and I aced it. And I came back, and I had my extra. So that was kind of a fun thing. Now it's kind of, you know, that's a license to learn, and that's where I like to tinker and play around with stuff and build stuff more than I talk on the radio.
I'm very, very happy to hear how you did it. That's a very cool idea. I guess I had a little bit of what I consider a leg up from being in the radio business as a technician for as long as I have. Some of it was new, but some of it was things I kind of already knew. So it helped me to pass the test. And bless you for passing the CW, because I just don't know that I could have done it.
While they were sending, they set it up for everybody, and everybody's sitting around the table, and everybody had their own pencil and pad, and they had this machine that would send the code. It wasn't like a recording. It was a machine, and it sent, like, perfect code. And so while I'm writing it, in the beginning it started out okay. I was copying it just fine. And then I started thinking about what I was doing, and my hand started jumping up and down on the table. And I had to grab my hand, my left hand, I write with my left hand. I had to grab my left arm with my right hand and hold it down on the table while I was writing. That's how nervous I was. I don't know why. I was just scared to death I wouldn't pass.
No, I've definitely been in that situation for other reasons, but definitely been there. And your stomach all in knots and sweat running, just waiting for that score to come down.
But looking back now, it was a fun journey, but I'm glad it's behind me. Wouldn't want to do it again. It's like I used to live over in Europe. I lived over in Europe for about a year, a little over a year, and then went back and forth a little while. So I wouldn't give you anything, or wouldn't take anything for the experience, but I wouldn't give you a nickel to do it again.
If I understand that, I would like to further my journey and not stop where I'm at. Right now I'm working off of a mobile rig set up as a base that was a hand-me-down. Just thought I could get on, learn a little bit, talk to a few people, and I just this evening found a user manual for it, so that was very beneficial.
Yeah, that's one of the things the guys say on here, you'll hear it a lot, is that that license is a license to learn. Right, this lets you get on the air, lets you experiment, lets you figure out what you can do and what you can't do, and what's hard and what's easy, and what you enjoy. And I've enjoyed it immensely. But my other hobby is flying RC planes. And since I've started amateur radio, RC planes have kind of taken the back seat. It's a whole lot easier to do amateur radio than it is airplanes. And amateur radio, you can break your equipment, but you're not going to plant it in the ground like an airplane, which when you're building airplanes, you know eventually that's what's going to happen. It's going to go down. If you fly them much, they're going to crash. So this hobby does have that hobby beat by a little bit right there.
Sir, my problem is I have so many hobbies that I've got to find something to settle down with. Just start buying a bunch of stuff to try it out, and then, okay, I'm done with that. I still keep the stuff, don't get rid of it.
W4DJW syncing up with a repeater. Well, I think we all have that problem. I like to do distributed computing and amateur radio and flying RC planes. And yeah, a round robin across all of them, and you do build up junk with each one of them, and it is junk. It's junk that you don't want to let go of, but it's junk. The attic is full, not under the house, though, because stuff doesn't last well there, but I have an airplane room that's hard to move around in, and my office is full of ham gear. So I know what you mean. It's easy to be a pack rat when you're a hobbyist.
4CKK. Right. The only problem with my hobbies is, one, like a lot of them, very expensive, but my gear is so big. I was in scuba for many, many, many years, loved it. That's all I ever wanted to do. But as you move and you learn a new job and you've got family to take care of, you have to steer away from it. Now my gear is still here, but all expired. It's going to cost me as much to get it recertified as it would just to purchase new or just rent.
So did you do that around here? Like we had a guy in our airplane club when the airplane club was up here at Lake Robinson and he was a scuba diver as well. And every now and then an airplane would go down in the water. And every now and then the engine wasn't floating, right, come detached from the balsa wood. And it sinked to the bottom, and they were expensive. And it was his job to go out there and dive for the engine or the receiver or salvageable parts that were expensive off of the airplane that didn't float. We had a boat, a rowboat, and when that would happen, we'd row out there to the crash site, and we'd collect the piece parts. And then we would get him to come out with his scuba gear and go down there and pick up the rest of the parts. And he always did a really good job. And yeah, if you were careful about it, you could salvage your equipment that way. You ever get any requests like that?
I've gotten requests to get sunglasses and car keys, things like that, a few times up at Lake Chokasi. Certification dives up there. Sent my daughter through school, went to all her training for open water and water certification. So. Yeah, I've done some of my certifications here. Most of them actually come out of West Virginia. But, yeah, I've done a few things like that. Depending upon what it is, people, they love to hand you money for doing stuff like that.
And I guess that gets you time and experience, and I guess that's fun, too. It's kind of like airplanes. People want to go for a ride in an airplane, and you're trying to build up hours. That's full-scale flying. That's one of the ways that I used to get hours is... to get your private license, you've got to get a minimum quantity of hours. And if somebody wanted to go after you were signed off and they paid for half of the flight, you could get your hours in at a reduced rate. So kind of similar to that. So that's pretty cool. Oh, yeah. I used to take my kids up there to Lake Chokasi to go to the underwater pumpkin carving contest. You ever attend one of those?
No, I haven't, but... I think I've heard about it, but gosh, it's been so many things up there. I was up there at the dive ramp, I'm guessing.
Well, I don't recall that much about it, but I know that they brought some pretty wild-looking pumpkins out from underwater. It was a pretty cool event. My kids enjoyed it.
That's very, very good. I've done a few assists with building things underwater. Taking my wife down a few times, I actually got her certified. There's an airplane up at Chokasi, used to be, years ago. I tried to take her down there with about 100 feet, which she didn't know she was at. She told me she was cold, so I had to take her back up. We never quite made it there.
I think they sunk a Chinese junk out there, too. There was a guy that used to be on this repeater a lot. His name is Steve. He lives in South Dakota now. It's called KB0KBJ. He was a diver, too, and he used to go up there to the Chinese junk and dive and go down to that ship that they sunk intentionally to be a diver. I think it was it's like attraction for divers or something like that. Have you ever been to that one?
Yes, sir, I have. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's over by the wall across the lake from the dive ramp. That's actually where my daughter did her certification dive, and I took her to the junk on her first certified dive, or her final checkoff dive. I took her and another girl down there. I was kind of their safety diver. The instructor knew me. He's like, look, I know you've got time. I know you know what you're doing. Go ahead and take them down. And they did their final checkoff with me, and we explored the junk. So had a good time.
Okay, well, cool. It's a small world. Only 6 degrees of separation. Everybody knows somebody by something.
That's a fact. I'd love to go up there and do more. I guess the most entertaining I did was getting my dry suit certification in the middle of February at Lake Chokasi.
I guess that was kind of bone-chilling, huh? Even with a wetsuit on?
Actually, no. That's the nice thing about dry. It's just what it says. It's dry. So once you get in and you've got your warm clothes on underneath, you come out and no water actually ever touches you except maybe around your face.
Well, now I might be able to do it like that. I don't like to get cold. I don't like COVID-19. And I don't like to get cold, either one. It's like Gary was saying the other night on his net. His hands can get cold and he's fine. His feet can get cold and he's fine. But if his hands and his feet get cold, he's not fine. I'm the same way. I'm just like that.
Right. You talking about the Whiskey 4 Echo Echo Yankee?
Not that Gary. The other Gary, KI4DOS Gary. He calls the net on this repeater every Wednesday night. Does the swap net? I think he was rag chewing with somebody, and they were talking about getting cold. I think it was last Wednesday, but he'll be the one calling the net tonight. Are you familiar with the net that we have on this repeater every evening at 9?
Sure, I sat in, I think, shortly after talking to you. It's probably been a couple months, maybe, since I've been on here. I had so much going on in the evenings, just haven't had time. But yeah, I did listen one night. It was kind of interesting and entertaining all at the same time.
Yeah, the number of check-ins has gone up since everybody is, sheltering in place. And that's kind of a good thing. It's a good, at the end of the day, it's a good thing for ham radio operators, all around the area to get together on a net and just know who's who and recognize their voice and their calls and stuff like that. I enjoy it anyway. Well, I'm going to get back to, I'm doing some number crunching for COVID. And I was working on a routine. The scientists that run Rosetta at home have backed off on creating work units for distributed computer crunchers like me. And I'm working on a way, if you hound them enough, they'll give you work units. So I'm working on a program that'll go up there and say, hey, I need work units. And it does it every 90 seconds. And then when they come in, it's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. The first one that gets there and says, I need work units, and they put some work units out there. That's the one that gets the work units. So I'm working on a program. And when you threw your call out there, that's the program I was working on. I decided just to take a break and see how you're doing. But I'm gonna get back to that. It's good to meet you, Mark. Handle on this end is Dave. Hope to catch you on the net later on tonight. KO4CKK, W4DJW.
W4DJW, great talking with you again, sir. 73 to you. KN4RJN, listening.
Hey, John, did you hear me telling Mark about how to get work units? You can actually, I was creating a program that would do that, and I was going to call it the Hammer.
I got, World Community Grid running on the Pi, and it seems to be doing well, so I just dropped Rosetta off of it and dropped Einstein off of it. So I got one computer running Einstein and two running Community Grid. And if Rosetta ever, gets their act together and comes back with some more work units, maybe I'll pop back over there. But World Community Grid is just running its little tiny off.
That is an aggressive program. So I went to set it up so that it would backfill where Rosetta wasn't giving me work units. And it took over. It just went in there and pushed Rosetta off to the side and said, we don't need you. We'll take care of it. Did you? And so, but I wanted to get back to Rosetta. I wanted to leave space for when Rosetta had work units, it could work, but no. So it's a good thing if you removed Einstein and Rosetta where you put that World Community Grid, because it does do COVID-19. Did you check off just the COVID work units?
RJ, and yeah, I just went with the COVID thing so it wouldn't go running around doing other stuff, but yeah, it's running its little heart out.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear you got it working. And my hammer just worked because my node that didn't have but three work units left, it had one CPU just sitting idle doing nothing. I had it running just here a minute ago, and now that one machine has 9 work units and 4 of them crunching. So I'm going to go find the next one that's low on them and run the hammer on it. Anyway, good to hear you got the World Community Grid up and running, John. That'll continue the battle against COVID. Catch you on the net tonight, KN4RJN, W4DJW.
73 to you. Who was the fellow you were talking to before?
That is Mark. He is down in Gray Court, and his call is KO4CKK, Kilo Oscar 4 Charlie Kilo Kilo.
KO4CKK, KN4RJN.
4RJN, KO4CKK. Go ahead, sir.
This is John. I heard you and Dave talking, and I was going to try and break in, but I never got a chance, so I thought, well, I'll wait till you guys get talking, and then I'll hop in there. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay, sir. Just came up to my man cave, / ham shack, / whatever else I needed to be, and thought I'd tune in for a little bit.
I finished the basement and turned it into my bar / office / library / ham shack / TV room. So, and I spend a lot of time down here. I understand you're new to the hobby, or relatively new.
Oh, yes, sir. I still consider myself very much a newbie, rookie, however you'd like to define it, at least on the amateur side. I've been in public safety radio a little over 20 years.
Got my license. Has it been a year? 2 years? I don't know. I'm retired, and every day, you know, flows into the next one. I'm like Dave. The COVID thing really didn't affect me a whole lot because I don't get out much anyway. But so yeah, I'm relatively new too.
No, I'm not the only rookie on here. That's why I like to listen and hear all the people get on and talk. And once in a while, I hear somebody that, like you, is relatively new, but maybe has been in it for a few years and just finally got certified.
Check out our net at 9 o'clock, and be sure and check out the net on Friday night. I run the net on Friday nights.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll make it tonight. As I said, this is my man cave //, and it's actually up in the yard. Kind of might get away from the house, TV, and such for a little while. So I'll probably go back and have a little dinner, even as late as it is.
Well, we kind of try to stretch it out. We have, you know, it starts at 9, and there's a lot of people don't show up until sometime after 9:30, so we kind of try to stretch it out waiting for what we call the second shift to show up. So if you get a chance, even if it's, you know, 9:30, quarter till, you know, check in and see if we're still there.
Yes, sir. Appreciate the offer. I'll see what I can do. It's a little more difficult when I'm actually at the house with a handheld. Tough to get signal there about anything. But I like the Friday night idea. So maybe I'll catch you back then.
Well, you take care of yourself and stay out of trouble and try and stay safe. And 73's to you. And I'll back on out of here and let somebody else use this radio.
73, you, sir.
RJN, I am clear.
KO4CKK, I'm clear as well.